Empower Radio presents Out of the Fog. Join intuitive guide and spiritual teacher Karen Hager for lively, positive conversation with light workers, healers, and dynamic wisdom keepers. Get ready for inspiration and connection. This is Out of the Fog on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Karen Hager.
Hello and welcome to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. Each week at this time, we gather for spiritual conversation and enlightening guests, and I am glad you're here. Time and distance are no barrier to energy, and that means no matter when you're listening, no matter how you found us, you are here for a reason. And I hope something in the next hour shines a light on your path and helps you move forward. Today's guest has spent more than two decades, discovering how energy flows between you and the world. Now, this energy can affect your moods and your thoughts, and you can learn to direct it to achieve and maintain balance in your life and in your connections to others. Kale Spirit Hawk is my guest today. He connects with the power of the elements of earth, water, fire, and air to embrace that transformative healing power of nature. Are you ready to meet him? Kale Spirit Hawk was born in Northern Virginia and has lived there for most of his life. Since 1999, he's made his home on 4 acres of woodland in rural Manassas, and he draws much of his inspiration from the landscape and the creatures who dwell there. Kale is one of the two co-founders of a small church of nature path spirituality that meets in Northern Virginia. He teaches classes in meditation and personal energy work, both within his church community and outside it in the greater Washington, D.C. area. Kale is the author of Living a Life in Balance, An Elemental Journey of Self-Discovery. And you can find out more about Kale and his work at kalespirithawk.com. Kale, welcome to Out of the Fog.
Thank you, Karen. I'm happy to be here.
Wonderful. I'm glad you're here, too. And maybe we should start with how you got to this place on your journey, because the techniques that you share in Living a Life in Balance come from a long history of your practice. They've evolved over time. So how did you get here?
Well, I started out as a teenager. I was a kid who was questing for meaning in life, and I hadn't found any. But a friend invited me to participate in the youth group of his local church, and I began going to that church. And I spent several months there. And one of the things that was impressive to me was the level of connection that the people had with one another in that church. Not too long after that, I went to college. And college, you know, it's full of thousands and thousands of adolescents whose emotions are running high, their hormones are going crazy, they're out of the house maybe for the first time, you know, without real adult supervision. And so it's a very cathartic experience for a lot of young people. So I found myself at Virginia Tech in the mountains of rural Virginia, surrounded by people who had this amazing energetic power about them. And what I began to notice was that I had the ability to sense the emotions of other people, and in some cases, actually to guide those emotions. When I was working with a friend who was having a bad time, being able to help direct some of the negativity away and help direct some positivity into their lives. And that sort of started me thinking. And I began practicing doing that kind of thing. I fell in with a small group of people who were practicing that type of intentional energy work. We didn't have any kind of system, but we all knew that we could do these various things. And so we all practiced them together. So I refined my practice just on an individual basis and tried to fit it into my then faith as a Christian. But over time, I found that there were questions that I had that Christianity wasn't answering for me. And in 1997, I ended up having something of an enormous crisis of faith that called into question everything that I believed. And as luck would have it, right after that, my work sent me overseas to the Middle East. And I was in a place where I didn't know anybody else, but I was by myself in the desert, in the sands of the Holy Land. And I'll tell you what, I have no surprise that three major religions came out of that area, because the desert speaks, the sands, the wind, the sun, it's just alive with spirit in that place. And so I went over there, a troubled Christian, and I came back having no idea what I was. But I began exploring and learning, and what I found was that the nature paths of spirituality were a better fit for me. So I began studying that, and that led me to the concept of the elements, the archetypal elements that were used by the alchemists of old. And I began looking at the energy work that I was doing from the perspective of those elements. And I realized that it fit very well. So I began practicing that and helping individual people on a one-on-one basis, working with that framework. And over time, one or two people became a half dozen, and a half dozen people became a dozen. And people started asking me to present this framework in classes. Also in that time, my wife, Liz, she and I founded a small church of naturopath spirituality. And so as a result, we had people coming to our home and looking to us for teaching. And so I thought, well, if these people are looking for me to teach, I'd sure better figure out how to teach them well. And so that's when I began refining the practice into what has become this book. I've been teaching these classes now for 10 years. And the book is really just a distillation of all of the things that I have learned in my own practice, combined with the things that I have learned from students who have come to the classes, because they bring just as much new information to me as I offer to them when they take the classes. So I've learned so much more than I figured out on my own by offering the classes and then listening to the students' perspectives in the classes.
I find that to be true for myself too, that I learn more every time I teach. And there's a beautiful way of deepening as you share your wisdom. You are also receiving wisdom from the students. So that's, I think that's very true. When you talk about energy, about being able to pick up and learn to balance, learn to work with, replace the negative energy with positive energy, What is that energy? Where do you believe that comes from?
Okay, that's a very good question. So when we speak in a purely scientific sense, we're using physical energy to cause vibrations in the air. And then, as on your program here, we're causing electrons to flow and so forth. But that's not a whole lot of physical energy in place. But if you look at a speaker, somebody like Martin Luther King, for instance, or Gandhi, or any of a number of amazingly charismatic speakers, they are not using any more physical energy than you and I are when they talk. But their speech, their ideas have the ability to reshape the face of the world. Martin Luther King and his I Have a Dream speech still causes people to get chills. And that was how many years ago? Decades ago. The energy that we're talking about in this book is that kind of energy. It is the emotional, spiritual, psychological energy that flows between people and carries ideas. One of the students in one of my early classes, I asked them to define energy. I said, you know, what do you think energy is? And this student said possibly the most profound thing that I've ever heard in the class. She said, energy is divinity in motion.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that sort of became my go-to phrase for that. Most spiritual paths believe that humans are in some way divine, either children of God or part of the divine whole that, of the universe. So every single person has a spark of that divine within them. And when we share that with other people, we share that divinity, that's divinity in motion, and that's energy.
And so when we tap into that at a level that is beyond the purely physical, if I'm understanding you correctly, we can change ourselves and also change the world,
yes.
Influence the perceptions of others, make a difference.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So knowing that we have this energy within us because of our connection to the divine, how can we more closely connect with it so that we can use it in that way that is beyond just the physical?
Okay, another good question. And that actually is what the first section of the book talks about. We, as individuals, we're constantly interacting with energy all the time. We do it even without thinking about it. For instance, if you have ever been a part of a stage production, or you're going to give a speech in front of a large number of people, or the first time that you stepped in front of the mic for your radio program, what did you do? You were nervous. You took a deep breath to prepare yourself for this thing that you're going to be doing, whatever it is. And you are not just bringing air into yourself. You are also collecting a store of that energy that would carry you through whatever it is that you were going to be doing. And then when you were done, everything was fine. You released a sigh of relief, and you released that extra energy that you had collected within yourself back into the world because you no longer needed it. We all do that.
And that power of the breath, when we connect with, I mean, that has tremendous mystical power just as it is, but when we connect with what may be the indwelling breath of what you might call the Holy Spirit, that mm-hmm. breath of inspiration, of creativity, the breath that calms, and then,
right.
of course, that release when you're done, whew, glad that's all over, is a wonderful way also of it maybe expressing gratitude that you got through it or releasing some of that pent-up energy that you no longer need.
Yep, absolutely. So we all do this. Everybody does it, and without even being conscious of it. The techniques that I present in the first part of the book simply build on that. The book takes you through a process where you begin breathing deeply and just make yourself aware of not only the flow of air in and out of your body, but the flow of this energy as you're breathing. And once you become aware of it, and once you become aware of where it is going in your body, for instance, it might collect in a ball in the center of your body, or some people find that it creates a second, what might be called a light body within their physical body. People who are familiar with the chakra way of looking at personal energy work might find that the energy collects in whatever their dominant chakra is. But wherever it goes is fine. It's up to each individual person as to what is right. But when you're breathing, the energy goes there. And when you realize that, you can then pinch it off like you are pinching the neck of a balloon that you're blowing up. So you take a breath, you draw energy in, and then you hold it there, and you release just air. And you do the same thing a few times, you can build up quite a store of personal energy in whatever place that is inside of you. And that right there, if you can do that, you can do anything with energy work, because it's the changing the flow through conscious effort of will. That's it.
And it's using, it works on many levels, it sounds like. It works on the physical level, but it mm-hmm. also works in the way that it changes my awareness of, it brings me purely into the present moment, and people who listen to this show know I'm a nut about the present moment, but it also reminds me that I have the power to direct that energy where it most needs to go and be aware of where I'm holding it.
Yes, absolutely. That is one of the key concepts that I speak with my students about in the classes. Anybody who is familiar with Christian theology is familiar with the two words, I am. I am were the words spoken by God, and they are the statement of enduring presence from which the entire universe was created. When we take conscious control of the flow of energy in and out of our bodies, what we are doing is we are standing before the infinite universe and we are saying, I am. Because only a being that has free will can consciously direct the flow of energy. Only a being that exists and is magical and powerful and capable of exerting its own will can do this. And by doing it, we are affirming that free will. And that's a huge, hugely profound step.
And it may require, especially for people who are looking to, this is such a practical book that you've given us, especially for those of us who are looking for healing, that being willing to stand before the universe and affirm our power, affirm our free will, affirm our ability to make change and our intention to make change, that can be a little frightening. Do you ever work with students who get just up to the edge of this and then are reluctant to make the declaration?
Absolutely. It is, as you say, it's a very terrifying step because you are walking up to the edge of a cliff and you are taking on faith that when you step forward, you're not going to fall. Regularly, I have students within my classes who begin the process, and at some point during the meditation, they're like, nope, can't do it. I cannot take this step. And that's okay. Because if they can't do it right then, that's not the right time for them to be doing it. If we think about a large field full of grass, okay, none of the stems of grass reach a whole lot higher than any of the other stems of grass. A tree in the middle of that field reaches much, much higher than the grass. And when lightning strikes, it's going to strike the tree. It's not going to strike the grass. So when we step forward in front of the infinite universe, when we say, I am, we are in many ways raising ourselves up above the stems of grass that surround us. We're making ourselves like a tree. And that has a couple of effects. One, it means that very few people step on a tree. People walk across the grass all the time, and sometimes they'll even crush it into the dirt. Few people step on a tree. But at the same time, we've made ourselves taller. We've made ourselves a target. And that's the reason for the next step in the energy work process, which is what I refer to as grounding. So the book takes a process. It sets up, first, here is the step of declaring yourself before the infinite universe, I am. And then, by grounding, you create an anchor for yourself that allows too much energy. If you are in a place where there's so much energy, like, you know, within a crowd, sometimes even a shopping mall during the holiday season can be overwhelming, the amount of energy that's going on. But when we ground, just like placing a lightning rod on that tree, if the lightning strikes it, the tree itself is safe because the lightning is shunted directly into the ground. So the book takes that step-by-step process and allows a person to gradually move into a place where they're able and feel safe standing in front of the energetic universe.
When you talk about the lightning striking the tree, it makes me wonder, and I know from my own path, from my own work, I'm interested to know from you what kind of lightning strikes the tree. In what ways are we more vulnerable when we stand up, when we're the tree and not the grass?
Okay. I already mentioned one thing, being in a place where there are a lot of people whose emotions are running high. So being in a crowd, being in a mob, being at a political rally or a religious rally, any one of those situations, anybody can be overwhelmed by the sheer power of emotion that is flying around in that space. Anyone who has ever been to, for instance, a charismatic or evangelical church ceremony, there is so much energy going on. Some of it is coming through the power of the words of the one who's leading, and then a lot of it is coming from the people who are participating and sharing that energy with everybody around them. Right. Whether or not you have stood up and said, "I am," that energy is there. And if there is no tree in the field, the lightning is going to strike somewhere, and it might strike the grass. So it's not a matter really of painting a target on your back by doing this. It is a matter of standing up and saying, something's going to happen. I should be prepared for it.
That's a great point. I'm glad you made that point. It's a great point. That energy is there. Some things are just true. Like gravity is true for us on Earth, right? Some things are just true. It's how you shape your response. It's how you prepare for that experience that, at least if I'm understanding your work correctly, makes all the difference between whether we are in balance or whether we're knocked off balance.
That's absolutely correct.
So as we are grounding, and the book has techniques for grounding and for centering, and you talk about those as two different techniques. And I wonder if you can just take just a second here to say the difference. You've got a really good analogy for that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So the process of centering is the process of defining, affirming, and becoming aware of the self. The process of grounding is the process of connecting that self to something bigger and more stable than we are. And in the book, I use the analogy of tying up a dog to a stake in the yard. Why would you tie a dog to a stake in your yard if you didn't know that it was your dog? So when we center, we are finding that sense of self. We're identifying who we are. We're saying, this is me. All of this stuff that is here that is collected in my energetic center, that's me. And then I can take that and I can connect that to a stable place. But I have to have that sense, that completely confident sense that this is me, this other stuff is not me. Take what's me, connect it to a safe place. Okay, so that, or to a stable place. And that, the first is centering, and then the second is grounding.
It's part of why it's really important not to hurry this. I see students often try to rush through the grounding to get to, like, whatever, you know, the good stuff. I'm putting that in ironic quotation marks. And sometimes when you rush through that grounding, you're missing the good stuff. When you rush through the, when you rush through the center, when you rush through the grounding, you're not able to completely take then the lesson or the step, the transformation that comes after that. So it's really important to slow down as you do that.
Yeah, instructors in many different disciplines have always used some form or other of the phrase, slow down, you'll go faster. And while that sounds sort of paradoxical or oxymoronic, what it really means is, if you are worried about doing something quickly, you are focusing on quickly, not on doing something. Whereas if you focus on doing something, and doing it perfectly and getting it right, eventually you will create the pathways in your mind that allow you to do that faster. During World War I, there was a highly decorated sergeant. His name was Alvin York. And his phrase for it was, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And that's what we try to accomplish with the book.
I love that. And it does. This is, so guys, when you check this out, what you'll see is that there are exercises in here, step by step, very practical, a very gentle, as I read it, it felt like a very gentle activation of this awareness of our own power, of our own energy, because doing this too fast is not your best plan, is it?
Mm-hmm. No, it's not. One thing I wanted to point out about the meditations, actually, is doing a meditation, especially a guided one from a book, is very, very difficult, because when you are meditating, you are supposed to be focusing on whatever it is that you're meditating for. When you're reading a book, you're supposed to be concentrating on the pages and the words in the book. And so it's very difficult to hold the book in one hand, read the steps of the meditation, and then actually do the meditation. For that reason, I have actually worked with a local musician group named Maharal, which is out of Richmond, Virginia, and they had donated their time and production equipment to creating recorded versions of all of the meditations in the book. They are read by my wonderful wife, Liz, who has a much more soothing and peaceful voice than I do. So she has done a spectacular job in recording the meditations, and there is backing music of Tibetan singing bowls done by Damien Bond of Maharal, and then for some of the exercises, additional music as well, performed by Brett Zwerdling of Maharal. So they did a spectacular job producing that for us.
That's wonderful. And that having the voice, having the music is also, I feel, important. It makes an energetic shift. It allows you to take it deeper. And as you say, also, it's a lot easier than having to hold the book in your hand. You are listening to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager. My guest is Cale Spirit Hawk. He's the author of Living a Life in Balance, An Elemental Journey of Self-Discovery. When we come back after this break, I'm going to be talking to Cale about harnessing the power of the four elements, working with those, and also then bringing everything we've learned together to talk about how we use these principles in our lives and in our relationships. We'll be right back with Cale Spirit Hawk after this.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude! What happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six...
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home,
I'm home,
and I love it. I'm home,
I'm home,
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home where I belong.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
And now back to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager on Empower Radio. EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager, and my guest on today's show is Cale Spirithawk. He is the author of Living a Life in Balance, An Elemental Journey of Self-Discovery. And you can find out more about Cale and about his work at CaleSpirithawk.com. Now, I want to spell that for you. Are you ready? It's C-A-E-L SpiritHawk.com, CaleSpiritHawk.com. And of course, I'd love to hear your feedback on this show. What are the ways in which you stand up and declare yourself ready, declare yourself open, declare yourself as understanding that the divine moves in you, moves through you? I'd love to hear from you about what's your reaction to what you hear on the show today. You can always reach me through my website, which is KarenHager.com. I welcome your email. You can connect with me on Facebook. Go for it. Let me know what you're thinking. Now, Cale, before we went to the break, we were talking about the importance of and how we can bring ourselves into balance by claiming our power. By understanding that we have energetic power, we can become aware of that and begin to direct it, to center ourselves, become aware of who we really are, to ground ourselves by tying that power into something greater, something stronger. And I'm wondering specifically now how, in your work, you've chosen a model of using the four elements. And I'm wondering if you can talk about how those elements tie into what you're teaching here.
Sure, absolutely. So the purpose of any model is to create something that is simpler than the actual system that we're dealing with so that we can understand it, so that we can look at it through analogy and understand on a simple level something that might ultimately be more complex. The nuances of energetic interaction between individual people, you could have a model that was very complex, but doing so actually doesn't help you, because if the model is complex as the thing that you're trying to model, then you need a model of the model to understand it. And at that point, it's turtles all the way down. So I chose the elemental model because it's simple enough for anybody to understand, and it is complex enough to provide a starting point for us to understand the interactions that are going on between us and others. Another way of understanding this is, for instance, modern chemistry has the periodic table of the elements, which has over 100 elements on it, and chemists use the understanding of that model to do amazing things, but the average person doesn't need to know. For instance, if you drive a car to work, you don't need to know the chemistry of gasoline and how it drives the engine. You could still get to work if all you knew was there's this liquid with fire in it, and I put it in the car because the car needs fire to go. So the elemental model provides us with something simple enough and sufficient enough to understand the energetic interactions that we have with other people. So when we look back at the ancient peoples, they had a much simpler world around them than we do. They didn't have electronics. They didn't have electricity even. All they had was what the world provided for them. There was earth beneath their feet. There was water that fell as rain, collected in ponds and flowed in streams and rivers, and eventually ended up in the ocean. There was air that was around them all the time. It was sometimes still, it was sometimes moving, but it was always there. And then there was this one anomalous thing. There was this great warm ball in the sky that it gave heat, it gave light, and it was clearly not earth. It was clearly not air, clearly not water. The only thing that they knew in their experience that gave both heat and light was fire. And so they thought of the sun as just a big ball of fire in the sky. And in a sense, they weren't wrong. They sort of extrapolated in the wrong direction. It's not that the sun is fire. It's that the sun and fire are both the same thing. They are the manifestation of physical energy of transformation. So if we have those four physical elements lined up on a spectrum, with earth being the most stable on one end and fire being the least stable on the other end, we begin to have an understanding for how we can sort of break energy up into smaller chunks that are easier to deal with. The attributes are easier to understand and cope with. And so the second part of the book actually takes a survey of the physical elements. It includes actual exercises that encourage the reader to put the book down, go outside, find a place to experience earth in a number of different ways. Lie on the ground, you know, lie on different types of ground so that you can feel the soft earth. You can lie on gravel and feel how it's completely unyielding and so forth. Go out and experience water. Watch a creek. Stand in the ocean and feel. If you've ever stood in the ocean when a wave washed across you, you know how powerful that is. It's not possible to stand against. Go out and watch the air. Watch the little cyclones of wind move leaves when they go around buildings, and watch clouds move and all of that. So it's the idea is to go out and really get an understanding for these are the attributes of this element versus that element versus this other element. And once you have that understanding, once you know it deep inside, you can begin to shape your energy work in ways that are related to those attributes.
How do I tie this awareness of earth, water, air, and fire? How do I tie this awareness to issues in my own life, to places where I know things are not in balance? It's not the way I want it to be. How can I take that awareness and use it to create healing for myself?
Okay. That's a great question. And there's actually an example in the book that deals with this. Suppose that you are dealing with a person who is extremely stubborn. Okay. It might be a boss. It might be a partner. But whoever it is, this is a person who just will not budge on anything. That stability, that unwillingness to change is very much an earth attribute. If you take a stone and you leave it on a table, it's going to be there tomorrow and it's going to be there the next day unless something moves it. So when we look at a situation, we need to look at, okay, what elemental attributes are being expressed here? This person is very stubborn, unwilling to change, unwilling to bend. Okay, that's an earth attribute. Okay, how do I deal with the stubbornness of earth? Well, anybody who's been to the Grand Canyon knows that over time, water can reshape earth in profound ways. It has carved a cavern or a valley that is in some places thousands of feet deep. And it's done that through perseverance, gentle, constant work to wear away that stone. Okay. Likewise, air can move around stone. If there's something in your way, if your boss is not letting you get your job done, maybe you go around that boss. Maybe you find another way to accomplish what you need to accomplish. Or maybe as fire, you use the transformative aspect of yourself and you figure out how to change the boss's attitude. Maybe get them excited about what you want to do. Okay. So it's all about looking at situations and saying, this energy is at work here. What energy do I need to use to counter that energy to create a situation that is better than the one I'm dealing with now?
And that's probably, I think it's part of why it's so important to stand up and claim your power, because when you use this energy in the way that you're suggesting, there's going to be change. And part of what brings things out of balance is when we do the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over, and it just remains uneven. When you use these techniques, there will be change. So you better be hanging on to your power. You better
Absolutely.
Be grounded. You better be ready to go.
Yeah, there's the saying, be careful what you wish for, you may get it.
Yeah. Well, and you do say in the book, you covered it a little bit when you were talking about Earth being the most stable, but you do advise that students work with fire last, with their awareness of fire, that transformative part of the self last. Can you say a little bit about why that is? Why you don't just jump right into fire?
Yep, absolutely. Fire is the one element on the physical spectrum that may or may not actually belong on the physical spectrum. It's transformation. Fire does not exist by itself. If you have a fire in your fireplace, it will be there for as long as there's fuel for it to continue to consume and transform. But once that fuel is gone, so is the fire. Okay, it cannot exist without something for it to transform into something else. For that reason, fire as an energetic archetype for us to use in our meditation is very, very tricky to play with because it transforms us as we're using it. It is passionate. It is volatile. It's powerful and it's transformative. And so just like you would never want to leave a candle burning in your home when you went away, you would not want to establish a connection with elemental fire and then stop paying attention to it. Because while you're not paying attention, the fire might find itself transforming something that you don't wish for it to transform.
So there's responsibility as
yes.
We are wielding these tools.
Absolutely. The book also touches on the subject of ethics very briefly, because there are books and books and volumes and libraries of study on the subject of ethics and what is right and what is wrong. And there are even different schools of thought about how you approach what is right and what is wrong. But it is critical when we are working with energy, which is something that can affect not only ourselves, but those people around us. It's critical that we are mindful of whether what we're doing is something that we should be doing. Could and should are two very different concepts.
Can you give an example, maybe from your experience with students or from your own path, of what we shouldn't be doing and what happens when we mess with that anyway? 'Cause I'm curious.
Sure. Well, so the very first step that we take when we're doing this energy work is we collect energy in our center. We are declaring before the universe, I am. We are saying, I am an individual who is possessed of free will. When we do that, we are granting ourselves the right to exist as an individual of free will. And if we're going to be fair, we have to then grant that same right to other people. Okay, so the fact that I have stood before the infinite universe and said, I am, means that I am a creature possessed of will. If you have done the same thing, that means you are possessed of free will. At that point, an ethical conundrum arises when, suppose you are sick and I wish to do something about that. Do I have the right to use my personal energy abilities to then send healing to you without your consent? And I would argue that no, you don't, or I don't, because you have declared yourself a creature of free will. Mm-hmm. And for me to then do something without your consent takes away that free will.
I agree with you 10,000%. And that this is important, guys, as you're listening here, this is important that you always, always have permission. Healing's always an agreement.
Mm. And right? there are, of course, gray areas in this because mm-hmm. nothing is as nice as black and white. Anybody who is a parent who has children, you understand that they have free will and they're probably wrong. There are things that they want to do that you have to stop them from doing. You have to subvert their free will because they don't have the experience with which to exercise that free will wisely. So yeah, there are gray areas. You cannot say never, ever interfere with somebody else's free will. But it's always, you need to be mindful of it. Am I, through what I'm about to do, am I going to subvert someone else's free will or subvert the choice that they have whether to exercise free will? And if you are not, then you're probably okay. If you're all you're affecting is yourself, then ethically, you're probably fine. If you are going to be affecting somebody else and taking away their choice, taking away their free will, that's when you have to be very careful with why. Why are you doing that thing?
That's where that discernment, that's where that centering comes in. That's where that understanding of yourself, the power of daily spiritual practice, mm-hmm. knowing yourself so that as you are making those choices, you can be as clear as possible.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm. When, where do I want to go from here? When we are looking at the idea of setting collective intention, mm-hmm. as a group of people, if you and I and a bunch of other people all get together and we decide to pray for peace, mm-hmm. we take our energy and we collectively direct it toward that aim, which we're trying to bring about. There's no permission there. And that collective intention is very powerful. Can you say something? We've talked about individual stuff a lot. Can you say something about how we as a group can make change, the power of collective intention?
Well, collective intention at its core is individual intention, all pointing in the same direction. Just like you might have one horse pulling a cart in one direction. If you have another horse pulling the cart in the same direction, you can haul more stuff. Whereas if you have two horses pulling in opposite directions, the cart's not going anywhere. So collective intention is really just lining up individual intentions so that they're all pointing in the same direction, so that they are all wearing the same harness, if you will, and they're all hauling the same load in the same direction. So collective intention is, at the end of the day, it's made up of individuals who are all sharing the same will, the same goal, or the same outcome.
In our personal relationships, sometimes we find ourselves, you yoke yourself to the cart with someone and then you find that you're pulling in opposite directions.
Yes.
Can we use this process, these teachings, to help bring balance into relationships when we both are pulling in different directions?
Sure, absolutely. Within the later chapters in the book and within the teachings of our own local spiritual group here, we talk about the five points of relationship. Everybody has a relationship with themselves, okay, and I'll get back to that in a moment. They have a relationship with kin, which are people that they consider to be family, whether or not they're actually related by blood. They have a relationship with members of society who are just the strangers out there that we meet on a day-to-day basis, and then a relationship with nature and a relationship with the divine. Now, the relationship with self is kind of the difference between our intellect and our emotional self. For instance, I know that I shouldn't eat that donut, but I want that donut. So that is that relationship with self. My intellect saying, no, you shouldn't, but my stomach saying, but I want it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about with the relationship with self. But with every relationship, there is an outflowing bit of energy and an inflowing bit of energy. So with your partner, for instance, you are putting things into that relationship and you are getting some things back. In a healthy relationship, there's a balance between those two things. You are giving that person positive things and that person is giving you back positive things. In an unbalanced relationship, you might be giving that person positive things and they might be giving you back negative things or nothing at all. So if they're actively giving back negative things, that's an abusive relationship. And if they're actively giving back nothing at all, there may not actually be a relationship there, even though you think there is one. But the idea is to find that point of balance, to look at each relationship and be mindful of, this is what I'm putting into it. this is what I'm getting back out of it. Are those two things in balance? Am I putting more in than I'm getting out? Sure, that happens in every relationship from time to time. You know, your partner's having crisis, so they need your support. They're not giving you a whole lot back right then. But then at another time, you have a crisis and you're not giving a whole lot, but your partner is supporting you. So taken as a whole, is this relationship one of balance where I am giving and receiving in kind and thus creating a stable whole?
And as we look at our partner, as we look at that relationship, as we assess whether or not it is in balance, can we use the same ideas? For example, if my partner is earth, can I be more like water to flow around that? Can I use that to start to shift the dynamics?
Sure, absolutely. Every situation, when you look at it, can be broken down so that it fits the elemental model to some greater or lesser extent. Every relationship that you have, every interaction that you have with another person, they all can be broken down so that they fit into one of these buckets. And once you do that, then all you need to do is think creatively about, all right, this is the situation. What is it that I want? Okay, what is my desired outcome of this interaction, of this relationship? And then how do I get from where I am to where I want to be? So my partner is air, let's say. Okay, somebody very flighty, has a lot of trouble focusing on things. How might I cause my relationship with that person to be more stable? Could I be more earth-like so as to provide a grounding influence on that person? Could I be more air-like so that the two of us can spin around like a whirlwind together, okay, and go off on flights of fancy together? All that we're limited by is our own creativity in finding an elemental influence that fits the situation and gets us closer to where we want to be.
Now, I see that we are sadly getting close to the end of our time together, and I want to make sure that you let listeners know how they can connect with you, what they'll find on your website, what's coming up for you.
Okay. So right now the website is actually relatively sparse. I have on there the links to the various meditations that I talked about earlier in the show. There is an email address on that website, and I encourage people to reach out to me if they have any questions. Just send me an email with their question, and I'll be happy to respond to them about it. The only upcoming event that I am specifically aware of is that I will be performing a book talk and doing some meditation work at Rising Phoenix Holistic Center in Manassas, Virginia, on the evening of Saturday, April 4th at 5 p.m. So I would love it if people came out to that. And I'll be happy to talk with them, answer questions, sign books, and do anything like that.
Are there more books coming?
I'm actually thinking about writing a book with my wife, co-writing a book, because she has made an extensive study of chakras as part of her practice, and we have developed a system related to individual personality archetypes that are associated with the individual chakras. And so we're going to try to put a book together that explores that and ties it into this book as well.
Oh, that's very cool. And that's, I mean, that, my gosh, there's a lot to explore.
Yes.
In that area. That, oh, please do. I know you can't just go, oh, yes, please write me a book and then get back to me in 15 minutes when you finished it. But wow, that's something that sounds wonderful. Kale, thank you so much for being on the program today. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your teaching and these tools.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a great time. I've enjoyed it very much.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, I enjoyed it too. This is the kind of conversation that I think is important for people to hear. And it's important for people to understand. And I'm very passionate about helping people understand that they can through insight, through spiritual practice, kind of take matters into their own hands, regain control, bring things back into balance. So thank you so much. That was Cale Spirit Hawk. His new book is Living a Life in Balance, An Elemental Journey of Self-Discovery. You can find out more about Cale and his work at calespirithawk.com. That's C-A-E-L, spirithawk.com. Book's available on amazon.com. It's available on a ton of different, in a ton of different places. I saw it at a Barnes and Noble. You can find it everywhere. If you would like to connect with Cale, please do feel free to use the email address on his website. And of course, if you've got feedback about the show, if this raised questions for you, if there's something you'd like me to know, you are always welcome to reach out to me through my website, KarenHager.com, and I will be very glad to connect with you that way. Thank you for listening today. Together we are spreading a little more light in the world, and a little more light is always a good thing. Until next time, I'm wishing you peace.